can do it myself. You don't. My last name is too long and stuff.
Okay.
So I can tell. I'm Petro. Just to tell you my background. Perhaps I should tell you this, just to tell you how I feel when I'm here. Down here it says Miss Whitehead has come to tell us how to amuse sailors. So you are the sailors, and I'm Miss Whitehead. So my background is in fluid mechanics. I studied at Caltech. I did my PhD in vortex dynamics there. And now I'm a professor at ETH Zurich. I work in computational science. And what we try to do is we try to take some of the ideas from fluid mechanics and apply them to nanotechnology, biology. So the reason I'm here is because I was with a cancer program. There's fluid mechanics in cancer, actually, and there was a multi-scale program. So I'm in three programs by now. So I was showing some things to William, and I saw some talks on that Randall gave, the Blackboard seminar, and I've been peeking in and out sometimes to what you do here, and I want to show you some of the things we have been doing in vortex dynamics, and the emphasis is on show. I'll be happy to go deeper or whatever, but just to give you an idea of what we do in our lab. So we are working in a Lagrangian form of conservation laws. So here this can be solid mechanics, this can be fluid mechanics. You can choose what is your stress-strain relationship. So we have particles, we follow them, and we change their properties. So in some of the movies you will see some vortex reconnections. This is the grid. If you like, these are the particles that I'm following. So the methods that I'm using, and I'll tell you a little bit, they're evolution of vortex filament methods. And the idea is that you have cores and you have particles that they have an arrow on them. Now, what we do in the lab and why we can do from particles for fluids to particles for nano is if you go to molecular dynamics or other things, the equations are Newton's equations again. And here's where we use a nanoparticle and we coat it with different hydrophobic, hydrophilic components, and we see how it's being taken up by a membrane. So we're basically developing a lot of software, and the reason we have been developing the software for about 10 years now, there's like 100 man hours, is that today we can do very large simulations. So the equations that we are solving are the Navier-Stokes equations, so in Lagrangian U omega formulation. And there is one thing that is very important compared to the old vortex methods that they have been kind of discredited in a fluid community. We remesh. And the reason is that when the particles are going apart, you can show mathematically that smooth particle methods do not work. You have also similar things when you have vortex filament methods and they start to distort and then you have to do some surgery. Here we don't do surgery, we do something called remeshing that I'll be happy to tell you what it is, a very interesting technique. So these are the equations that we're solving, vorticity, and there's a big Poisson equation there. So some of the things we have been doing, as I said, there has been a lot of software development coming from fluid dynamics. We have been looking into long wavelength instabilities of aircraft wakes. And we have been doing some very big simulations using 10 billion particles in this one. This is about now 4 or 5 years old. So today we can do 300 billion particles. And if I had a bigger machine, I think we could do the trillion. But we have only 40,000 processors. And then this is the eye candy that I was showing to William and others. What you see here is volume rendering of the vorticity field. And the reason that you see a fly-through and you don't see a movie of how this thing is evolving, because each one of these guys, every time you have this thing, this is about 10 gigabytes of data that you visualize per frame. So even the visualization becomes interesting, but we can study a lot of different reconnections and the evolution of this thing. Another thing we do, and it goes towards a vortex dynamics, as you like. So people in nature, they observe all these animals, and you can see how nicely they produce vortex rings, but experimentalists are kind of limited as to what kind of information they can get out. So what we do is we segment images or videos from the animals, if you like. Here we have to make some sure that when you segment something, it becomes divergence-free. And then we reconstruct the geometry and the motion And then we can have surfaces like this, and we can study different strokes. And then we solve the Navier-Stokes equation with the motions that are being taken out of videos of animals. And then we are able to study the formation of vortex rings and vortex dynamics for different types of motions of the animal. And what is remarkable is how to see that these guys, when they doing all their pumping, they are able to maintain all these vortex rings in their interior, and vortex rings don't fly all over the place. You can actually change and have different motions, and you can see all sorts of rings pumping left and right. But when you take the motion from videos, you get some really harmonious things between the vortex rings and the animal's surface, if you like. So other things we have been doing, and so again, vortex rings. I don't know if many of you have seen these videos. I guess you know all these animals. I usually, when I give a talk in biology and they introduce me as a fluid mechanician, I try to use this video because that's a link of fluid mechanics and biology. That's one of the ones, and that's the only thing they remember from my talks anyway.
What is that thing?
It's a dolphin. And
oh,
yeah, and then they make rings. They puff out of their blowhole air, and it forms a vortex ring. And then they're reconnecting it and cutting it and playing with it. So they can make. You can find in YouTube, if you type vortex ring dolphins, you can find lots of things like that. It's remarkable what they do.
See, that's like a smoke ring.
Well, it's actually has different dynamics, I think, than a smoke ring, because these are air.
Oh, it's air bubbles.
Yeah, air bubbles in water, so it's not like a small ring, I think, like a smoke ring, I would say.
So it's just, it's not as, is there vorticity around it? Is the thing
I think there is, yeah, I think there's probably vorticity that is being around it as it goes, yeah.
It depends on how much air there is. If you have just a small amount of air bubbles around, they get attracted to the core by centrifugal force.
Yes.
And they just serve to show you the core. So you can get a lot of those dynamics without any role played by surface tension.
But it is going, I mean, what we're seeing is air bubbles attracted to the core of the vortex, and things like that.
Yeah. So we have been playing with this thing. So we have been looking at vortex rings, and we have been looking at vortex rings in stabilities. So we have been looking in how vortex rings are being formed. This is a vortex ring at Reynolds number 7,500. These are direct numerical simulations. And we have been looking at all sorts of diagnostics. This is, again, that's the same ring, but we can do visualizations of this kind. And we spend a lot of time trying to understand all the filamentation, what is the history of these filaments, that you see here. But again, as I said, it's just to show you what are the simulations we do, and be happy to be in touch with anybody who wants to go further on such things. We can do also other visualizations or vortex lines. And this is anatomies, if you like. So one of the things that is kind of fun to observe, even at later stages, so this is an earlier stage of this vortex ring, one thing that is interesting is that the core remains quite intact for quite a long time, even when the outside of the rings may look quite convoluted. But then it's interesting to relate the core of the vortex rings with later filamentations and where these filaments appear on the ring. And another thing, well, that is interesting, has been observed experimentally, that I can tell you, is this thing down here. When they observe the decay of circulation at the cross-section of the ring, and what people observe when this thing finally decides to play, so these are the experiments. So there is some kind of stepwise. So this thing remains constant, and then it sheds something. It loses circulation. It stays kind of constant. It sheds. It sheds. And we have been observing similar things as well, but it's not clear to us why these things are happening. So that's questions we try to answer. There's a paper in the Journal of Fluid Mechanics. You can look at it. And then just for the fun of it, I started doing these things. So actually inspired by what you guys were doing, and then thinking that the Olympics are coming. So I started doing knotty rings. So you can...
Fluid vortex.
This is vorticity that you see. This is isosurfaces of vorticity, and it's very cheesy because the Reynolds number is 2012.
So these aren't Borromean rings, though, are they?
They are what?
They're not Borromean.
I don't know what is a Borromean
ring. No. But the Olympic rings are Borromean. Okay. I thought that was supposed to.
What is a Borromean ring?
That no two rings are linked.
No, I think they are.
These are, you know, obviously these are linked. But the Borromean, a lot of our discussions have been about the difference between Borromean and non-Borromean.
This is from the Olympic, coming from Greece. That's some of the few things that are left there. So we can look at reconnections, and I'll tell you something. Now you're looking at the front of the ring. I'll tell you something that we start to find interesting, and then you start developing all these structures. Actually, five rings come out here again, and then as I say, this thing finishes with a smile. And then this is from the top, so you can see a different view. And now this is to show you how actually it is in 3D. So there is certain tilting that we had to do to make it 3D. So that's one kind of tilting, and that's the kind of vortices that you get. And then we change the tilting, and we change the Reynolds number actually at the same time. We do all sorts of stuff. So this is 4024, twice before. And now the tilting has changed, and I'll show you what the tilting is. And now you get different reconnections and different structures.
When you set up the initial conditions, is all the velocity concentrated around the rings?
All the vorticity is in the rings. Yes. It's inside. This is one isosurface. I would say this is a low-level isosurface because it disappears faster.
What's the velocity doing? Not vorticity, the velocity.
So these are rings, so the velocity field, we have to take all the composition of all these rings to...
Sure.
To
but the bits of velocity just concentrated around the rings, and otherwise there's no velocity field.
No, velocity is everywhere, right? You have vorticity...
No. So the question is, what's the distribution of velocity?
Oh, I have not plotted. It's quite complex to plot. I can do it if you're interested. But
these are the sorts of things we've been discussing throughout the program.
So what are... I'll come to questions, to ask you questions, actually, not the other way around. So again, these are some of the vorticity field. I'll show you something that may answer a little bit your question in a second. So this is from the top, and this is just to appreciate the three-dimensionality. So that's something that may answer a little bit your question. So I'll tell you what this thing is. So these are scalars, okay? And now they're passively transported by the vorticity field. So that's the first type of thing. We can do other things. We can do FTLEs, Lagrangian coherent structures, all these things. We have the software to do it, and we are aware of these things. But this was just to play. So this is just to show you.
So what happens for quite a low frame
rate? I haven't run it. We haven't run it.
But should be preserved for quite some time, right?
The what? The structure of these guys?
Yes.
So you think the low Reynolds number would be more interesting than...
I mean, in the sense that they should, at some point, after a long time, start maybe colliding.
But the diffusion will bridge everything there, I think. So between the yellow, the red, and the green, they will just melt on each other. So it would not be so excited, I would think, the low Reynolds number. Actually, I want to go to as high as I can. So these runs here, they are overnight runs. So we can do lots of higher Reynolds numbers, but that's just to show you. So you can do the other. This is the 424, again from the top. And then another thing, final thing I want to show you, I'm interested in fish cooling. So one of the things I was interested in is vortex dynamics responsible for the formation of fish schools? Or is it that the guys learn from each other and they do all these things that people who look into animals talk about, follow your neighbors, etc.? Is it possible that by swimming in a certain fashion, you stay together with others? And now look at the tails of these animals and look at the vortex rings they do and look at some beautiful vortex collisions that are head-on collisions that are taking place down there. So I'm not saying that this was a motivation for the next one, but the motivation for the next one, this is some experiments by Paul Sutzle at Caltech. Maybe you remember this stuff. So he was doing experiments of vortex reconnections. So he has colliding vortex rings. So these are pictures from his experiments, and you observe that the axis of the ring is changing. So here you see it from the side. And so they come together, open up, and depart in opposite direction. And I have not seen a simulation of that. So here's a simulation of that to tell you that we can go through reconnections at this Reynolds number. When things start to come close together, you need to have very high resolution. Maybe the dissipation of a numerical scheme will affect the results. And here is a Reynolds number 10,000. Which is a little bit more exciting. So the rings, they come together. You see the first generation of strong vorticity. They open up. And now what is interesting is to look at the threads that are somewhere in the middle. How the threads, what they do is they impart an axial flow onto the ring. And then when the rings are coming back together, there is violent second reconnection, which people have not been observed before because nobody has done Reynolds number 10,000 for these rings. What people have done is this. They have done vortex reconnection on tubes, but again, they have done it only for early times because of the expense. And again, we find something interesting. So the tubes come together. What you observe is vorticity magnitude. They generate this collision, there is these threads, and now the threads, what they do is they impart an axial flow inside. This is periodic, so it becomes a vortex ring. So what they do is they impart an axial flow, if you like, onto these rings. So even these rings eventually dissipate and they travel away, the effect of the red guys, the threads around them, is to create, to make, to give them more and more axial flow. And what happens is eventually you have rings with low vorticity but high axial flow. So this is something that nobody has ever seen before. And now there is a violent second reconnection, which is actually producing much more vorticity than the first. So the role of axial flow is something that we are very much interested to explore. And there is a paper that just came out in the Physics of Fluids called Vortex Tube Reconnection and Reynolds Number 10,000, where we discuss all these things. Another thing we are working on now is all these simulations were done using billions and billions because we're using uniform particle sizes, and now we are going to use different sizes of particles, if you like, and just to give you an idea what it may look like. So here is a Riffmeyer-Meshkov instability, and we want to have dynamic grids. It's based on using ideas from wavelets to develop grids, but that's where we're going next, to develop adaptive mesh refinement for vortex dynamics. That's it. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. This was just to show you from the vortex world and the viscous flow simulations what we do. I'm very much interested in the reconnection problem because there is this question of singularity that some of you may be aware. And there's two different numerical schemes that have been applied, a pseudo-spectral method and a finite difference method. These methods that we use have different properties, so that would be also interesting to see if what kind of results we get on the same initial conditions. So. Please, yeah.
You showed the experiments. How did they make these rings? With optofluidics or?
This is 1988 experiments. I think he was just shooting two jets in a fluid.
Somebody doing with prisms?
I have no idea.
Fluid circulation.
I think there's the world's expert right here to ask. I don't know actually.
They're doing some experiments with
prisms.
No. They have a different method.
So for us, experiments will be fantastic, and I'll be happy to interact because experiments have viscosity. So that's interesting for us. And we can run also in viscid, but there's always numerical dissipation there. So one has to take this thing into account. So questions I have, what are interested or unexplored problems that one can try to answer with a tool like that?
or have you considered felicity at all in any of
them? Oh yeah.
So,
we have.
So that's the main theme that we've been discussing in this meeting.
So the paper.
If you have anything to say about felicity, that would be interesting.
I can give you the paper.
Just say what you find with felicity.
So here is this is circulation entropy. So here is the helicity density in a moving reference frame that we have here. Three-dimensional energy spectrum, let me see. We must have plots of energy K. How come we don't have any, we talk about helicity, but then we don't describe anything? It cannot be.
Well, can you describe it?
Helicity, there you go. Okay. So that's some of the results that we get. Helicity, so this is the three cases, and I don't remember what are the three cases. So I think they're different. The cases is without axial flow, with axial flow, and yeah, I have to see. I don't remember what the three cases are, but I can give you this paper, and then I can, you can. I'll be happy to answer more detailed things. Let me see what are the three cases. So I don't know. I think it's starting the collision with an axial flow and without an axial flow. I think that's the three cases that we are talking here. And and this is the spectrum that we observe. So. So that's what, yeah, well, here is the discussion. So if we don't have initial axial flow, then we conserve it and it starts to deviate at about the time that we have the second reconnection. Times 13 is the second reconnection around here. And then the other things is, so the other thing that we have is when there is an axial flow in the simulations, and then we have a different behavior on the helicity. But I guess you don't do axial flows, right? Because you cannot have an axial flow on the filaments, or can you?
We're interested in all of these cases, but mainly where the vorticity where the helicity is related to the topology of vortex lines.
That's not something we have looked at it very much. I was not aware of all this topological fluid mechanics, if you like. As I said, I'll be happy to just give you the data or whatever you want from here. I'll be happy to interact with people if they're interested in this kind of stuff. But definitely the message of these collisions is that axial flow makes a huge difference. And even if you don't have initially axial flow, at later stages, axial flow becomes important for coherent structures, and that changes the dynamics.
That's exactly the point of topological fluid mechanics.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, it actually changes even the energy spectra, because some of the energy spectra that we have is at the first collision. I don't know if it's here. I can tell you what happened. So in the first collision, that before axial flow has been imparted on the rings, when there is all this generation of multiple scales, we get an energy spectrum with -5/3. When axial flow is imparted, and then we get the secondary collision, and we look at the energy spectrum, we get a -7/3. And we don't know where this -7/3 spectra come. And if someone knows or works on these kind of things, and how is this related to helicity, that would be, I think, some interesting questions for us.
Yeah, we have a lot of questions.
Yeah. I think I took too much of your time. So my email, it's petros@eth.z. If you care to send me a note or. So that's, be happy to discuss further. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will.
All right.